You're listening to the WWE Podcast, and we're going to get to the Undertaker Chapter 3 Last Ride documentary entitled The End of an Era. And we're going to get to the details of it. We're going to dive in deep. And, of course, you're going to get to listen to some audio with me. So we're going to get into this one. This was one of the most interesting chapters yet on a lot of different levels. So let's get everything started right after this. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden, and they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample, and again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is your night to take a look back. And I guess you could consider this a wrestling nostalgia episode. I put the intro of the for our jingle for the wrestling nostalgia night at the beginning of the show, as you heard. So, yeah, I guess this is wrestling nostalgia because we're taking a look back at The Undertaker's career. We're going to be reviewing The Undertaker, The Last Ride documentary, Chapter 3, End of an Era. So, there's a lot to dive into today. We look back at WrestleMania 34, The Undertaker's match in Saudi Arabia against Triple H, his return to Madison Square Garden, the matches with Shawn Michaels and Triple H at WrestleMania 25, 26, 27, and 28. The Brothers of Destruction that take on DX in the infamous just train wreck of a match that they even admit was a train wreck of a match. And then we get a bit of a preview of the next chapter, Chapter 4, which I am extremely interested in, as they're going to be covering the Goldberg Undertaker match that was, I mean, I don't even need to tell you what it was. To say that was a bomb is certainly being kind. And so I'm very, very interested to hear from Undertaker, maybe from Goldberg, if they dare ask him to be a part of that documentary. And to hear from other stars on exactly what their thoughts were, and to hear if they indeed put the blame on Goldberg or just try to pass it off as no chemistry or what. I mean, that is going to be very interesting. Unfortunately, we have to wait until June 14th or so until we get to see Chapter 4. So they rattled off one every Sunday for the last 3 weeks, and now we have to have a large gap in time, which seems like forever for, again, one of the best documentaries I've seen flat out, whether it's wrestling or anything else, because of just how well it's produced and the feeling of the documentary, the pacing of the documentary. Everything is just so well done. So certainly, if you have not subscribed to the network, this is the time to do it, because this is worth the price of admission in and of itself. Again, I have no monetary interest in you signing up for the network. I'm saying, from a pure wrestling fan perspective, you are doing yourself a massive disservice by not watching this. And to be quite frank with you, even if you have the casual wrestling fan in your life, I would bring them in on this. And you could sell it to them by telling them, if they're not going to come over to your house or you come to them, is to just say, hey, you get a free month with the network, it's worth the price of admission. I mean, even if you had to pay the $10, I'd pay $50 to watch this thing. I mean, in retrospect, to see how, I mean, knowing how good it is. So again, please see it if you're a wrestling fan. Watch chapters 1 through 3. It will give you more information about Mark Calloway in a couple hours than in a couple of decades watching him on your television screen. And you know, as I watch these 3 chapters, there's a recurring theme so far that I've noticed with Mark Calloway, the man, because that's really what this is focused around. It's not really about Undertaker's greatest moments. It's nothing like that. There's certainly enough of those. This recurring theme is a sense of pride for Mark Calloway, and more pride than I imagined that he had. And when he had those terrible matches in Saudi Arabia with Shawn Michaels and Triple H versus the Brothers of Destruction, and when he had the bomb of a match with Goldberg, even then, I mean, again, of course, predating this by many, many months, this documentary, I had a very strong sense that this would not be the last time we see Undertaker, because he's too prideful to go out on that type of a performance. And that was validated throughout his 3 chapters, where, you know, at WrestleMania 33, he thought that could be it with Roman Reigns. WrestleMania 34, with John Cena, and we'll get into that in detail. And it wasn't that long of a match, but that's, I think, ultimately the problem. And then we get into a little bit more depth of the matches he had after WrestleMania 34 with Triple H and the tag match. And it's a recurring theme that we see, that he wants to make sure that it's worthy of his last match, that he'll have that sense of closure. He'll know when he had that final match, right? And so my point is, I don't know. I really don't know if we will know, or if even Mark Calloway will know ahead of time if it's going to be his last match. And the evidence I have is based on the 3 chapters that I've seen, because going into all of those WrestleMania matches and matches in Saudi Arabia and so forth, he didn't know if those would be his last matches until they happened. And so I don't know if we will know, or Mark will know, or WWE will know ahead of time if it's indeed his last match. And which is tough, because imagine the marketing and promotion that you could have and should have if you were able to, ahead of time, know, hey, this is Undertaker's final match, this is the Undertaker's retirement match. Imagine being able to sell that, because people have been speculating for 10 plus years now, sometimes in some cases longer, that this would be the Undertaker's final match. This has got to be the Undertaker's final match. This will be that. This will be that. And we have yet to see it. And if WWE was able to get one last good squeeze out of the juice that is the Undertaker cash cow, why wouldn't they? But in fairness to Mark Calloway, we And he doesn't, maybe we don't know until it happens and go, oh, that was it. So I would say we need to treat every match that he has from here on out as his retirement match. Again, hopefully they will be able to bill it as such. My fear is that if Undertaker has the match as promoted that it's his final match and it doesn't live up to his expectations, does he go back on his retirement? You know, do fans start chanting one more match and it just, the cycle continues? I'm hopeful that doesn't happen, but based on what everything I've seen, I think that Undertaker is fearful to set a predisposition that the match he has next is going to be his final match. Because I think the expectations for him are going to be through the roof. I think for the fans are going to be through the roof. And what if he feels really good after the match and thinks, hell, I could do another one. I could do another one. I could do another one. We saw evidence of that throughout the documentary as well, that when he feels good, he says he gets the itch to keep going. Understandable. But again, it all comes back to he doesn't know. We don't know. And it would be a nice round number this year, a nice three decades of destruction marketing method, right? That would be a great way to end Undertaker at Survivor Series this year, or announce at Survivor Series that he is going to end his career at WrestleMania. And again, I will say this because I don't know how people are forgetting this. And it's super important to remember. Really important to remember. When Austin was coming back to Madison Square Garden to Raw, and Bray Wyatt was a part of Raw, when there was the Firefly Funhouse that night, I and my co-host at the time did a preview show for Raw and said, oh my God, could you imagine The Fiend coming out to attack Austin? And WWE played off of those thoughts, because during the Firefly Funhouse that night with Austin on the show, the clock in the Firefly Funhouse said 3:16. And Bray Wyatt alluded to, in some kind of gibberish way, that he had no beef with Stone Cold. He had no beef with rattlesnakes or something like that. And he took a mallet and whacked the clock. After he whacked it, the number, I think it was 1117, 1117, meaning the day that The Undertaker debuted. And he said, that's better, and kind of looked at the audience or looked at the camera. That's a foregone conclusion, and it should be, that Bray Wyatt will likely make an appearance at Survivor Series and attack The Undertaker, or he will, ahead of time, challenge The Undertaker to come out and have a talk to me or something like that. There will be some type of altercation, some type of story started at Survivor Series in November because of The Undertaker's 30th anniversary. And God willing, we have fans in attendance. I mean, this cannot go without fans. Please. There cannot be an empty arena. No NXT trainees acting as WWE fans. Okay, yeah, I know they're actually WWE fans, but they're acting like the normal audience that WWE would like. But I just am really hoping that this whole coronavirus gets to the point where it's still around, but it allows us to fill arenas again in some kind of capacity. So let's all hope that The Undertaker doesn't go out with a whimper and gets the crowd reaction he deserves. So those are just my thoughts. Again, based off the documentary series that I've seen so far with Undertaker, it would be a damn shame to see him go out with no audience. Anyway, let's get into chapter 3. Enough of my conspiracy theories. Although I think I'm right on this one, because if you remember, Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 31, Undertaker beat him. And Bray Wyatt's on a vengeance tour right now, avenging all of his losses, and that is one of them on the very big stage. So, I think I have a little bit of ground to stand on there with the clock, given the history of Taker and Bray, and then maybe ending with Bray retiring Taker at 37. That's how I would do it if it were up to me. So, alrighty, chapter 3. Now again, we started here talking about, at the beginning of this, looking back at WrestleMania 34. And I'll get to some audio in a minute. But The Undertaker got himself into crazy good shape. We saw the hip surgery in the last chapter. He did a bunch of cardio. He did CrossFit. He had a ring. He had his wife help him with stretching. And I mean, he just basically rebuilt his body to a point where he felt he was almost to the level where he should be and what fans expect him to be at and what he expects himself to be at. And he gets himself into this amazing shape for John Cena at 34. And as you remember the buildup to that, it was John Cena constantly for weeks and weeks and weeks calling out Taker, waiting for the gong, waiting for the lights to go off. And eventually it led to John Cena saying he's going to go as a fan, bought a ticket to the event. And then Undertaker finally comes out after John Cena, hit an AA on somebody and walked up the ramp, and boom, we get Undertaker. Now, that match happened, but I don't know about you. I was extremely disappointed in the length of the match. And Undertaker seemed to really follow suit with that. I mean, I'm not just trying to blow smoke up Taker's ass. I remember reviewing that show way back when and thought to myself and said out loud, hey, why was this 3 minutes? Why the hell was this 3 minutes long? Right? Taker even said he felt like he had a lot left in the tank after that match. He mentioned several times that, hey, this was a match I could have gone a lot longer. I don't know why I only got 3 minutes. And he tried to be respectful in the documentary, but you could read between the lines. The writing was on the wall that The Undertaker was pissed that he only had 3 minutes. I don't know why. I have no idea why they wanted 3 minutes. I don't get it. I mean, were they afraid of what would happen because of WrestleMania 33? And I was there for that. That wasn't great. And we all saw that in Chapter 2. But were they just trying to hedge or mitigate their risk of Taker hurting himself or hurting John Cena? Maybe. I tend to believe that because a guy like Taker would demand respect and command respect at his stage in the game with his tenure. I'm sure he should be able to pull some strings to get an extra 5 to 10 minutes there. I mean, jeez. So to me, it's just Undertaker or WWE not wanting to put Mark, the product, at risk for embarrassment, Mark at risk for hurting himself, and for John Cena's health of if Undertaker can't lift him or they botch a move just because of Undertaker's lack of timing, what have you. And that's my thinking. The reason was never given or even speculated on in the documentary as to why they only got 3 minutes. It made no sense from a fan's perspective. We're looking at this going, we waited all this time and speculated about John Cena versus Undertaker for 3 minutes. I remember saying, like, what? Like, it was a really disappointing, considering how big of a star John Cena is, to only lose to Taker in 3 minutes was disappointing. It was great to see Taker in such great shape. He was moving well. He was quick. He was fluid. He was agile. He looked like the Undertaker of old. And then we got a big fart of a time in the match, or basically didn't get enough time to tell the story. And that was the big disappointment. But so let's get to some audio from the documentary and hear what the Undertaker had to say about this.
It was nice that I got to crush her favorite. Let her know that her daddy was the man. But I was disappointed the match was only what it was.
I would have liked to have seen him, you know, have a little bit more time and go out there and just physically put on a show I knew he was capable of. But in that short 2-3 minutes, that did more for him mentally and emotionally than anything else.
The fire was really lit once I came out of the Cena match. I mean, I was feeling good. I was in shape. Yeah, I was like, well, shoot, I can, you know, I can work a few matches.
So there we go. I mean, like, you listen to that, and that's really where the WrestleMania 34 bit ends, is he clearly is disappointed, rightfully so, about the length of time of this match. And yeah, I mean, you heard it too, that, hey, I feel good, let's keep going. And that's where he went to Saudi Arabia and faced Triple H in their final match ever, which I think was a very serviceable match. I had no issues with Undertaker and Triple H for the final time. Certainly wasn't what it was when they faced each other at WrestleMania 27 and 28. I mean, that's kind of an unfair standard, because that was, I mean, 8 years ago, or 8 years prior to this. So, you know, that's the viciousness of this cycle. And it shows you the inner workings of a wrestler's mind, especially someone of the Undertaker's stature, to get into his position and not want to let go because you're starting to feel it again. It shows you that truly, as many have said, it's in your blood and you just can't let it go. And that is extremely prevalent throughout the entire documentary. It shows you just how deeply invested Undertaker is, and many others. I mean, it's not just Taker. This, I think, is representative of most of the wrestlers that are in the industry. So that's, I think, the theme we should take away from this. That's hard to walk away, right? It's very hard to walk away. So then, I mean, this goes on to Undertaker returning to Madison Square Garden, and the matches with Michaels and Triple H, which, I mean, they really speak for themselves. Do I really need to go into it? Well, yes, I do. So let's listen to a little bit of audio from some of my favorite WrestleMania matches of all time. Really, all four were stellar, I think, headlined by WrestleMania 25. But let's take a listen.
Feel the electricity. He felt it. I felt it. Everybody in the building felt it. I remember saying, I'm having an out-of-body experience, because I thought I was. I was just seeing things that just were phenomenal. Determination and passion. God almighty, it was a classic. Chemistry between those two guys, great execution, storytelling is what we do, but it's storytelling at its finest.
Y'all took them every which way you could get them. Outstanding, man.
The pressure of not only following what many consider the greatest WrestleMania match ever, and then on top of that, you also have the responsibility of having his last match.
So I'll just pause it there as they go into WrestleMania 26 with Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker Part 2 in Shawn's final match, which I don't think was as good, and I don't think that's fair to even compare, though. To think that they would have topped WrestleMania 25 was hard to believe, simply because it was damn perfection at 25, probably my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. And that's saying a lot, followed very closely by Rock Austin at WrestleMania 17. So, but don't worry, guys. Orton and Edge, they're going to top this, because it's going to be the greatest wrestling match ever. Don't even get me started on that. However, this at WrestleMania 25, again, was pure perfection. It was probably Undertaker's best match ever. Maybe Shawn Michaels. Do I dare say it was his best match ever? I mean, individually, you can make a case. You can make a case. It was that good. And I think 26 was hard. I mean, that's a hard act to follow. And I think they still had a very, very good match. But you have to remember, Jim Ross was not on commentary at WrestleMania 26. It was Matt Stryker. So you talk about a fall from grace. I mean, and Jim Ross at the helm makes anything sound more important. So I think that some of the greatness and the feeling that this is a big match was taken away because of the fact that Jim Ross was not on commentary. So there's that. Okay. Now we move on here after WrestleMania 26, and we start getting into the Triple H matches that started at WrestleMania 27 and went to 28. So let's take a little bit of listen to that, and we'll be right back.
Brutality. I mean, we took it to another level, that's for sure.
Wait! Undertaker! What a Hell's Gate submission! There's still life! Can the game escape? The game taps!
I know it felt like the end of an era to us, and kind of, how do we encapsulate that? We'd all had so many conversations about this and getting Sean back involved. And it all seemed to begin to come together as we kept talking about Hell in the Cell, because that's the match that he and Sean started, and all the Hell in the Cells that there had been, Taker and I had been in like 2/3 of them.
So as we get into WrestleMania 27, we all know how... I actually would think this second one with Triple H, I think, was better than the first, where with Shawn, it was the reverse. And now that you put all three players in the game here, no pun intended, you put all three players in the ring, Shawn Michaels, who had been retired 2 years earlier by Taker, is the special guest referee. Was he going to be impartial? Was he going to play a factor at all? And they even get into that regarding the near fall that many of us, including myself, believed was the end of the Undertaker's streak at the time. So let's hear a little bit from these guys, and I'll stop talking, and then we'll come back.
To me, that story had everything. Shawn Michaels, Mr. WrestleMania, who's the referee. Here's the guy Undertaker, who he couldn't beat at WrestleMania. Here's his best friend Triple H. Now he's the ref. He has to stay impartial.
Shawn Michaels, the special official in this matchup.
Oh, man, uh-oh.
And Shawn's facials and his expressions and his emotions throughout this entire match made for tremendous theater.
I don't think there's a better hook in a match than the super kick into the pedigree, into the kick out.
His emotions overwhelming him.
I think right there, more so than any other time ever, did the people think that the streak would be broke.
Look at this.
My God, we know what that means.
Yes, we do.
The sign.
Oh, a disaster.
So Undertaker gets the win here, and then this is where the name of this chapter comes along, and it's the name of the chapter with the end of an era. And but first, I'll get to that, and we'll get to the audio too. But that was, I remember the super kick into the pedigree. That had me sold. I mean, I bought it hook, line, and sinker, as Taker said, because no one had ever kicked out of a pedigree or a super kick into a pedigree. It never has happened. And Michaels, you got to remember, was just retaliating from Undertaker giving him the Hell's Gate and getting frustrated with him earlier in the match. So that's an important point too. Michaels didn't just go into business for himself here. And this, I mean, again, listen to Jim Ross. Tell me Jim Ross doesn't add it tenfold to the presentation. He's just that freaking good. And it's great that he's in AEW, by the way. So this, again, this match was truly the end of an era on a lot of levels, and the fact that we would never see these three performers in the same ring at the same time again, as was told, well, it wasn't totally true. I mean, because of the match that happened in Saudi Arabia that we all would like to forget even existed, including all four performers, I'm sure. So, let's get to some of the audio again, and we'll return.
I knew that we had just finished something that was going to be so special that would last through the annals of time in our industry. It was storytelling at its finest. Here for the last 4 years, these guys have beat the living hell out of each other, and we did.
That was our last big shot all together of us doing what we do with each other.
It's as if these three men know that they will never be at the same place at the same time in this exact environment.
It just was all real. At that moment, us leaving together, us standing on the top of that stage together, that's one of my favorite moments, I think, of all time.
A standing ovation from 78,363. And a moment that will live in infamy in WWE, an image we can never replicate.
This is an organic moment that happened. It wasn't planned. It was probably one of the most special moments of my career. Standing up there with those two guys who I had the utmost respect for. I have a picture. Sean has one and Triple H has one. Actually, Triple H had them made for us. And it's the picture of the three of us standing at the top of the ramp. Picture hangs above the door of my gym. And it's always, it's a constant reminder of probably the most special moment in my career.
So that was pretty damn cool, right? I mean, you have Undertaker and Michaels and HBK, right? Michaels and Triple H. And that did, honestly, I'll be frank with you. When I watched it, I thought that was a planned moment, because it reminded me a little bit of the curtain call. But with the curtain call, obviously the circumstances were different. You didn't have guys that were at the level of the respect of HBK and Triple H and Undertaker at that moment. I mean, Triple H and HBK were actually involved in the first curtain call, but many, many, many years later, it felt different because they were all at the end of their careers. And while Triple H, when you think about it, hasn't even officially retired, they are all at the end of their careers, and two out of the three of them are at the very, I mean, they're so sporadic that it is essentially their retirement match every time that they do wrestle with Triple H and Undertaker. So this was a special moment, but I'll be honest, I didn't think it was organic. I really didn't. I thought it was very pre-planned, and it, you know, I'm very weary of these moments, because now that it's organic and I look back and I know that it wasn't pre-planned, I feel better about it. In the moment, until I heard that news from this documentary, I wasn't a fan of it, because it was very, it exposed things after a badass match of hitting each other with sledgehammers and kicking each other in the face and all of that, that they all just kind of like, oh, we're buddy-buddy now. I'm not a big fan of that, right? I'm still of the belief of protecting the business to the extent that you can. But looking back and realizing what that moment was, and it wasn't planned and they just did it in the moment, I'm more for it because of that, because they all knew that that may have been it for all three of them in that environment, as Jim Ross would say. So a very special moment. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that moment, and also the thoughts on Michaels and Taker at 25, 26, or any of the other two Triple H matches. I mean, so hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So please do that, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. Alrighty, let's take a quick break, and then on the other side, we've got a little bit more to cover here with kind of the downside of Undertaker's run here as we wind down the Undertaker's Chapter 3 with the Brothers of Destruction that take on DX. Oh yeah, we're going to cover that, and we're going to get to the audio from that, from the documentary, right after this.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Hey everybody, so it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to, and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles the VI and King Charles the VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Welcome back, guys, and let's get to it. Let's get to the D-Generation X versus Brothers of Destruction. I think many of us remember this, not very fondly, for so many reasons. To me, the number one reason is Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement. In my mind, he never came out because this was rough. Because it wasn't worth... It looked bad for Michaels to come out of retirement for Saudi Arabia money. Number one, the visual, the optic was terrible for Michaels to do this. And all four performers had a rough night, and the story was, well, let's just get to it. Undertaker can describe this better than I can, so let's just do this, and then, oh, and one side note, isn't Shawn Michaels a million times better when he's serious? How many times have we seen Shawn Michaels, since retirement, come back, whether it's in just kind of a one-off or a Raw reunion or to come back and celebrate Triple H's 25th anniversary, whatever it may be, which, by the way, that there was no storyline. I was surprised. I thought that was going to lead to some angle with Triple H getting back in the ring. But when Michaels comes out and he's got the self-deprecating humor and he's not taking anything seriously, it's just kind of a wink and a nod, I'm out here to have fun. That's not the Shawn Michaels I like. Shawn Michaels serious is infinitely better than the Shawn Michaels that is out there pretending he's out of breath, coming to the ring, making inside jokes, not taking anything seriously. That is not the endearing Shawn Michaels that, at least in my eyes, that I like. And also the bald head at this during this match, woof, extremely distracting. This whole thing was just not as bad as Goldberg and Undertaker, which we'll get to in Chapter 4, but certainly... certainly rough. So let's get to it with Undertaker.
Are you ready?
The Brothers of Destruction versus the Generation X. It's huge. On paper, it's huge. You know, there's no weak links anywhere in the four of us.
King Undertaker, Brothers of Destruction. We got two words for you.
I mean, that's just like a dream, like for all of us to be in there together one last time. The table was set for success.
And, well, we all kind of know what happened here with the table did not exactly deliver the success, and it was tough. So let's get to a little bit more audio here, and then I'll come back with my thoughts.
Was I surprised Shawn came out of retirement 100%? every conversation I had had with Sean at that point was absolutely not. But at the same point in time, you go, I don't want to do this, but yeah, but it's with guys that are, you know, we've all been down the road for 25 years. Piece of cake.
I was blown away that he agreed to do it. Even talking to him about it, you know, he had no aspirations of making a comeback. It was a one-off.
Wait a minute, Shawn Michaels, super kick to the Undertaker!
You know, Hunter and Taker and all that, you know, being out there with those guys, it was just a comfortable thing. And so it's like, oh, well, that I can do, and that sounds like fun, and thrilled about doing it and encouraged about doing it. It's with Kane and Taker. Dude, it's a night off, right? You'll come in there, we'll do a couple crotch chops, we'll throw some glow sticks out, a couple super kicks, drop an elbow. It'll all be great. No problems, right? Easy. Except me and Taker are, you know, doing the once in a while thing. Sean hasn't wrestled in however many years. Kane's the mayor. It's a bad comedy movie. It really is.
That's actually really funny. In Triple H called it a bad comedy movie. And it really was. That's true. Yeah, it was rough. I mean, again, that is true that we didn't take it. I didn't take into consideration the fact that Michaels hadn't wrestled in a while. You know, you'd think if he had planned this kind of one-off coming out of retirement match that he would have prepared himself better than he did, or maybe he did and it just wasn't executed. I don't know, but it was a rough match. And like I said, the bald head with Michaels was, to me, the biggest heel of the match. And it was really just extremely distracting. I did not like the bald head. It just, Shawn Michaels without hair is, it's just, it should be illegal. I mean, it should be criminalized. Somebody should, or he should pay some kind of fine, a civil fine for not having hair. But anyway, yeah, this match was tough. And let's continue with the thoughts.
History happening now. And Triple H, oh my God, up over the top. Hunter hit hard.
My arm was hooked in there deep, and I just gone. I said, I just tore my pack off. Sean never panics on it, but I remember the look in his face like, you're hitting me. At one point, I remember looking up, and it looked like Kane's whole head fell off because his mask came off.
Shawn Michaels hit Kane so hard that Kane's mask came off his face.
It couldn't have gone any worse.
It was a total train wreck. It was a disaster.
The game has nothing left, but was that enough? It is! Generation X wins!
Oh, goodness. It totally blew.
WWE Crown Jewels. Have a great night, everyone.
We're all humans, and things even happen to people that you don't think things like that happen to. I take a lot of responsibility in that because my mind, I wasn't there. I mean, I was there physically, but mentally, I wasn't there. And Michelle and I had some personal things going on with other parts of the family. And, you know, so I had that drama, you know, going on in my head that I was all consumed with. If that match would have came off the way that it was intended and the way we would want it to, that may have been enough for me.
Yeah, so right there, I mean, you say that's the point I was making. That when Undertaker said that would have been enough for me, he said he might have gone out on that match. He might have retired there. So this is my point, is we may not know until it comes out and Undertaker's satisfied with the match. So to build it up to retirement and know ahead of time and market it as such may not be the Undertaker the way he wants it. Because then if he's not satisfied with the match, then he doesn't want the match to be the final match and be his retirement match. So, but yes, it is, that match was a bit of a train wreck, and I would not recommend going and watching that. It will not make you happy, especially if you're a Shawn Michaels fan. I do remember Kane's mask falling off. I do remember that. And Michaels with his moonsault, and he got busted up, and Triple H tore a pec. It was just an unmitigated disaster, as they all said. And it shows you, you know, it really shows you, the fan, that even if you are a legend in this business, that if you don't keep yourself in shape, or at least semi-regularly having matches, that even legends can have awful nights. All four can have awful nights because of how infrequently they all perform. If this had happened back in 2002, this would have been probably the match of the night, maybe even like an all-time classic. But when you put guys in there that are aged, that don't perform regularly, and it has been many years since Shawn Michaels even performed, you're asking for trouble, and they relied on name brand value, and they relied on just muscle memory to get them through this. And I understand why, and it just shows you how difficult this profession can be, even for legends. So this documentary, guys, again, that pretty much closes it out, as Undertaker continues to search for closure, and that's really the last part of the documentary, at Chapter 3 anyway, where he continues to search for that elusive, I feel like I'm done. That was it. I'm done. And the thing is, I don't know if Undertaker will ever find that moment. What if Undertaker doesn't find that elusive, satisfying, feel like I have closure match? Right? Undertaker may have to chalk it up to, let's announce this as my final match. Good, bad, or indifferent, this is it. And just realize that you may never have that match where you feel totally satisfied and feel like you can walk away. Because if he doesn't, Father Time continues to pound away at all of us, Undertaker included, and it's not going to do him any favors as we speak right now. Every second ticking by is another moment that we're all aging. And especially in this sport, this profession, it favors young guys, and Undertaker's had his body reconstructed from multiple surgeries. So the fact of the matter is, if I was Undertaker, I would think long and hard, that's what she said, about just saying, hey, let's announce it, because I don't know if I'll ever find that match. And I don't want to have to continue to put my family through this. If I get injured again, if I get another concussion, I want to be able to hold my kids. Let's just call a spade a spade. Let's just say this is it. I mean, that's honestly what I would do, because he is age-wise really, really getting into dangerous territory of, no matter how much working out he does, still is putting himself at a risk. So those are my thoughts on Undertaker and Chapter 3, and I'm really looking forward to Chapter 4, as any of you who have seen this documentary, I'm sure, are also on board with that. So, guys, I hope you enjoyed this. I'm really glad that I decided to do the Chapter 3 review tonight. Next week, we'll resume the normal wrestling nostalgia with a match or a pay-per-view of my choosing, or a moment of my choosing. I don't know if it's going to necessarily be a pay-per-view, but send your suggestions or comments to realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can also get your voicemails to that email address as well. Just create a voice memo and send it to me via email there. I still don't have my Twitter fixed. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm just getting aggravated at this point. I don't know what's going on. I haven't heard anything. So it's just kind of not existing right now. So just send all correspondence to my email, realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And I will respond or take your suggestions under advisement. So the rest of the schedule, guys, for this week, AEW and NXT tomorrow for your reviews. SmackDown review with Jeff and Brian, our latest co-hosts, reviewing SmackDown. That'll drop on Saturday. So that's a cool deal. Full SmackDown review coming on Saturday. And then I'll be back either Saturday night or Sunday night, I'm not sure which one, with your week in review with a co-host, working on who that's going to be on my rotating cast. Things are just kind of crazy. It's, you know, with the whole pandemic, people are working or their schedules have changed or whatever. So I'll be working on a co-host spot there. So we still have, what, four more shows to give you guys this week, and it's Thursday. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hit me up again on, I was going to say Twitter, but you can't. Subscribe if you want to on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating and review. It really helps out the show. And as always, I'll talk to you next time. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles the VI and King Charles the VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
Listening to the WWE podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.